or have issues like this on military bases, you know, 5,000 to 6,000 veterans, military personnel, active and retired, active and inactive, I guess, commit suicide every single year.
One of my friends.
5,000 to 6,000? That is insane. That is completely insane. And see, it's like that spiritual thing. There's clearly something wrong here.
You really think so?
I really think so. I mean, clearly there is an issue if you have a guy who never saw combat duty but still has post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, isn't that kind of the nature? Isn't that what the military kind of does that to you, no? I've not been in the military. I think that's kind of what boot camp is about.
Right. Designed to break you down and strip you of yourself and build you back as a part of a machine, a cog in a wheel. You're a private. You're a grunt. You wear dog tags. I mean, you're less than human.
But there's something quite amazing in that, you know, the greatest generation, the folks that fought World War II.
You mean the generation with manners?
That's what Brokaw, the generation that didn't wear jeans, you know?
And they didn't allow their women to wear pants.
The greatest generation, as Brokaw calls them. You know, those folks went to war, they came back, they drank heavily and smoked a lot, but hey.
And they had lice.
No, I thought most of them got deloused, right?
Mm-hmm. This is a fun story. Did either of you hear about this?
That Jesse, I hadn't completed my thought yet.
Oh,
I mean, you know,
I got lost on deloused. I'm so sorry.
I'm glad you had your issues of. Did you have issues with lice recently?
Just bed bugs.
Is this thing on? We'll talk about it later.
816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. We'll go to the phone in just a moment. The idea being is that clearly there's something wrong. I mean, there was. A certain level of society said, hey, World War II, go fight it. This is important. Not that there weren't pacifists and people who were against the war during World War II. There were. But it's overwhelmingly popular.
Yeah, they were called commies.
There was a sense of duty. You know, the communists were our allies. Pinkos. During World War II.
And the propaganda was thick. The greatest generation were the first to take this full frontal black magic trick straight in the gonads. I mean, the TV, satellite, radio, the onslaught of propaganda that the human mind had never experienced before. That, I mean, they got sucker punched right in the gullet of their soul with it, and they had no choice other than to just swallow it.
Donate your car. Have it made into a bomb. Buy war bonds. You know, everybody pitched in.
Taxes to beat the Axis.
It's 2 minutes after the hour of two right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. But those folks were able to come back and lived in the golden age of America where, you know, if you have two arms and two hands, you can go get a job. And after 30 years, you get a pension. And that job
and have to work, and you can buy a house for $6,000, and you can buy a car for $900.
And they probably really believed what they were doing was right, as opposed to, you know,
the reality of the situation sinks in pretty quickly.
Those poppies aren't Nazis in Afghanistan, are they?
Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning. Is this Ben?
It is.
Ben, this is Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, man. Yeah, that was me who sent the email, so I was a little bit impetuous, so I apologize for that. I get bugged when people start touting the significance of the Ramones and Kurt Cobain and Radiohead.
Oh, this is Guitar Charlie. I knew it.
Yeah, it's your Charlie.
Hello,
but
Charlie.
Anyway, to Fort Hood. I don't know if you cats know the Team Wake 'Em Up guy. Do you know that guy on his YouTube channel? He reviews these kinds of stories like Sandy Hook and Fort Hood, and you might look up his channel. The guy's name is Review Man Fly. He's a black dude. He reviews these things, and he basically calls them all fake. Fake event. Sandy Hook's a fake event.
With actors.
And he uses the information from the mainstream media and the journalists the Washington Post and the New York Times, and he uses all of their references to basically show all kinds of inconsistencies and premeditation on the part of the military and the media to basically make a pretty good case for a sort of premeditative propaganda event.
I mean, seriously, Charlie, I know that when Sandy Hook happened, a lot of people tried to say, and I don't know, it's a rabbit hole that I'm not really interested in peering down into. But yeah, that some of those victims' families were not victims' families, that they were actors, and that the children who were killed later played, were in part of a presentation at the halftime show at the Super Bowl. I mean, there's some pretty outrageous things that get thrown around out there. I don't know that it's not necessary for me to subscribe to them. I mean, do you think that there is, I mean, that's what's taking place? I mean, do you think that there are actors that are out there pretending to be victims' families and that it's more of a stage production than it's an actual tragedy?
I've studied it. Like,
I was asking Charlie.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Well, I'm not 100% sure of it, but I do know that the mainstream media, let's take a flight, whatever, the Malaysian missing flight.
Sure.
There's another situation where there are lots of conflicting reports, and then eventually it looks like some sort of a dog and pony show in the media. It doesn't even look like anything that's real. It seems impossible that there would be some arbitrary flight out into the Indian Ocean where the plane would disappear completely. You know, it seems like there's something fishy going on, and it seems like the media is involved in it. And you know darn well that 9/11 was that way, so, you know, why wouldn't it be? And what the purpose of it is, well, demonizing somebody, you know, I don't know who, but in the missing Malaysian flight case. But in the Fort Hood case, I don't know. You know, I don't know. Why would somebody nut out and kill themselves? You know, it goes all the way back to Lee Harvey Oswald. The guy who did it is no longer around to be tried and questioned, like the bin Laden is no longer around to be tried and questioned. Why would they get rid of the only evidence of 9/11 that they had
in
the mastermind of bin Laden? They suddenly throw him in the ocean, the only evidence they have? That's absurd. It's ridiculous. You know it's a lie. So you sit back and you say, well, you know, what in the hell are they telling me this crap for that makes no sense? They must be lying. Why they're lying, I don't know. But you tell me, man. Does Sandy Hook smell real? Does the flight, Malaysian flight smell real?
Well, that would say, what the aftermath of Sandy Hook was very real, and what that was is essentially a run on ammunition in this country and a run on guns. I mean,
I don't know, man. It all just seems like.
Well, I hear that. I'm just saying that it's hard for me, because there's no way for me to prove it, to say that these are actors. I have no, there's in, if you try to explain that to somebody who may be more of a mainstream perspective on the world, you are going to sound real crazy.
I know, and it's real easy to just be called a conspiracy nut and get dismissed immediately. You know, I'm fully aware of that. I've been called that and dismissed plenty of times.
With 9/11, there's a lot more, you know, nut to wrench there. I mean, there's a lot more evidence that you can point to and go, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot. I mean, how do you fly a plane into the Pentagon? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And, you know, in regards to the Malaysian airline, it's the last time I can remember an airplane disappearing was Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Literally, that's the last time I can remember that.
Smells fishy too, but this one really smells fishy, this airline thing. And is the Fort Hood thing some sort of a
is it just a crazy
distraction
guy
from the Malaysian airline? Are they running other stories to distract from ongoing stories that they're getting busted for?
But when we start playing,
you know, I don't know. It's
a game that we play with ourselves, though, when we go, we're being distracted. And no doubt, they have spent, and by they, I mean the cable news networks, have spent literally the last month interviewing guys with mustaches who are analysts about the airline safety, you know, industry. Just guys, hey, get another guy with a mustache on. We're going to sit around this round table with a, you know, I mean, I saw the black box. I found the black box. Wolf Blitzer was sitting in front of it talking to a guy with a mustache for the last month about where the black box is. Look down, Wolf. It's right in front of you, buddy.
With all this technology,
and there's no
how
doubt
do you
that
lose an airliner?
It's amazing, isn't it?
But anyway,
it's truly
check
amazing.
Out Team Wake 'Em Up and review Manfly.
Okay.
And check out some of his gear and see what you think. I won't bother you guys anymore.
I've had my shot. I got a question, Charlie. What did you say at the beginning of your call about the Ramones? Because I just didn't catch it.
He sent me an email. I'll show it to you in a little bit.
Well, look, man, it's just basically that I grew up through all that stuff and lived through the Ramones and Kurt Cobain and Radiohead, and I question the significance of that. I think there has been significant rock and roll, but that none of those groups are.
Are you on Harrison's
team? You're a Pat Metheny guy, though, huh?
I don't like Pat Metheny. I mean, I don't dislike him. I think he's a great guitar player, but I don't care to listen to his music very much. I think they're much more interesting jazz guitarists that I like personally more. But I have no.
Are you being influenced by the Sled?
Impressed with his prowess and his success, but I also don't find myself very interested in his music. But I if you want to discuss those kinds of era guitarists, I like Steve Kahn and Ralph Towner. Those guys I like a lot better. But
you should check out Burt Bacharach.
Oh, he was a kind of a dated-sounding but very prolific composer from the 60s, did a lot of movie stuff, and also wrote music for the Carpenters and had a lot of pop.
Classical hits. Face melters. That's what I'm going to say there.
I don't know him or them, but Bacharach's a significant composer, American-style pop music, but, you know, it's even that, if you want to get into composers, I could go on and on, and I won't. So, yeah. Hey, man, you guys have a good one. I'll let you go.
Charlie, you take it easy, man.
All right, man.
All right, take it.
As to what Charlie was saying, as we move into the information age, the culture creators, the society pilots, you know, they know before we know that this information does become more prevalent. I think one of the things they've done is to offer that alternative to really just muddy up the water. That's what Sandy Hook and Malaysia and 9/11, all of these things have in common. One thing, and that they're all equally inconclusive.
Well,
by design, up one side and down the other. Whatever the truth is doesn't matter, excuse me, because the information presented is designed to make people schizophrenic, fear of abandonment, fear of the unknown, the fact that there is no solution is the point. They don't care if you believe it's crazy people or SSRIs or crisis actors or the gun crowd or the Second Amendment. Whatever you think's to blame, they don't care. The fact that you'll never find a resolution is the point of this. MK Ultra, mind control ultra, these specific tactics are tried out on individuals, and then the program itself is implemented on the ultra scale. All of these things are equally inconclusive. That's all they have in common, and it has to be by design. It's Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The point is to get you to run around the whole show. There is no Holy Grail. Whether you believe there is or there isn't the point. You've ran around on a fruitless journey, wasted your spiritual third eye energy on all kinds of
nobody
nonsense.
Has a third eye anymore. They're gone.
Mine's still there. But in the meantime, you found no solution, no resolution, and the beautiful side effect is that we all start arguing with each other, and the divide and conquer tactic is fully implemented on the ultra level. And I'll give you my theory someday on rock and roll being Egyptian music.
Well, let me just say this, because I don't get all the references. I mean, we're in the Midwest here, but just looking out for the show, I mean, everybody, I noticed you and Charlie and you guys, you keep throwing Sandy Hook in there with all this other stuff, like the Malaysian plane in 9/11. I just know personally that a girl I went to high school with married a guy from, they actually live in somewhere near Sandy Hook. And she goes on rants all the time on Facebook about how the next time she hears somebody say something about Sandy Hook not being real, that she's going to drive to their house and, you know, bitch slap basically.
Because she said
that she was there that day. She saw the school. She saw them bringing the bodies out with the stretchers and stuff. She said it was damn real, so.
But that doesn't preclude the fact that they cook up a bunch of nonsense and put actors in there on top of the real stuff. That's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah. One of the answers isn't correct. They're all, it's D, all of the above.
You're saying it's like an onion?
Real people died. Fake people died. There is training
drills.
You just
keep peeling off layers until you're standing over the sink crying?
I mean, correct.
That's got to be, I mean, really, though, I mean, come on. It's got to be speculative because you don't know.
I don't.
You don't know. I mean, you can say that there are actors involved. I mean, that's just one of those things to me. I'm like, there are actors who are involved, and you see the video. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah.
Of the guy who's smiling before the press conference is supposed to start. And he's smiling. And he's like, you want me to look like this or like this? And they're like, oh, we're going live. And today, and just like, I can't believe what happened. And I mean, it's just a bizarre video.
It's like Wolfowitz with the comb.
No, it's well, it's a lot different than that.
The Boston bombings, the Aurora shooting, Columbine.
There's no doubt that this idea of these mass shootings, you know, even though, I mean, the guy, this Lopez guy from Fort Hood, it was 17 people got shot, something like that, and there's a couple of people who are still in critical. Three people died.
One guy died saving a whole room full of cats.
Kittens.
Yeah.
Okay. No. So the point being, though, is so these things happen. There is no resolution to it. A conservative says put more guns, make guns more available. A liberal says we need to take the guns and make them less available. Neither one of those things are a solution to this problem, are they?
No.
Is there a solution to mass shootings? The only solution to mass shootings, I guess.
More Groupons.
Love your neighbor.
Well, now, is it that? I mean, the only really solution would be we need to have a tyrannical government that controls every aspect of our lives. So the only mass shootings are the ones that the government does right in front of big trenches of dissidents, right? I mean, that would be the solution. If you live in a free society, you have to deal with people acting upon their free will. And sometimes that's not going to be what you ultimately want.
So I was going to tell you guys this earlier. I don't know if you've heard, but it's a local story here. Have you heard...
I'm start talking about Freak's Tattoo. Are you?
New York complaint. You familiar with the New York complaint?
Maybe.
Missouri gun maker Black Rain Ordnance has a new AR-15.
Hold on, I got one of their cards in my wallet.
And I mean, apparently there was the whole. It's a response to the tough gun control measures passed by New York lawmakers last year, banning the sale of assault weapons. So, local Missouri gun company has a new AR-15 called the New York Complaint.
Sweet.
Good one.
That's funny that they named
like
it that.
That.
But, yeah, I've been to their...
That's for protecting your domicile.
Yeah, I've been to their little place.
You could hail a cab with that thing.
What's the Chicagoland look like?
It's a Tommy gun.
It's called the... What's Rahm Emanuel's brother's name? No, Rahm's the guy there now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, the handgun model of this is...
The Deep Dish.
No, it's called the Spitzer Hooker.
Client 19.
But, that's that.
Great. Yeah, no, there it is.
That's that, yeah.
Thanks for that update on new ordinance coming from... the state of Missouri. All right, 18 minutes after the hour of 2, 816-931-5534 is the telephone number. It's 931-KKFI. And there is no solution to those problems. There's no question that the last month plus spent talking about the missing airline has been just that, a bunch of time talking about a missing airline. And I always love the old guys going, what do they not want you to talk about, man? What are they trying, you know, to hide from you? What is the media not reporting on? What's taking place? I mean, what are we talking about? You know, genocide somewhere? Are we talking about wars getting started? What exactly are we talking about? Because the answer would be yes, wouldn't it? All the above would be correct, would it not? But does that matter? Do people need to be distracted from something? I mean, is that a valid argument to go that the Malaysia missing flight is really just a distraction for people? Aren't people heavily distracted enough?
Well, you know, that's the whole thing. I mean,
am I wrong here? Or, I mean, it seems to me that everyone is already preoccupied.
People think that this whole, you know, all these bushy-haired strangers, you know, committing mass shootings is like, you know, some kind of, you know, some kind of, it's like genetically engineered or something. But it also could just be the fact that, you know, all the drugs and the Xboxes and the, you know, McFlurries have piled up to the point where people are just cracking. Not everybody is as strong in the head as, you know, this roundtable that you're listening to right now.
Right.
Yeah, not everybody. It's mostly true.
Some people still, you know, go to the discotheque on Saturdays, you know.
Hey, 816-931-5534.
Please stand by.
931-KKFI. So there's going to be an election in Kansas City on Tuesday. I really look forward to that. I love elections. Do you know why I love elections so much?
Free donuts?
No. Where do you get free donuts on election day?
At a church? God.
Hey, when was the last time you voted, Jesse? They had free donuts were involved? I'm pretty sure that would be against campaign laws. They were to give you donuts for voting.
Well, it depends on who brings
the should we
the
call
donuts.
The tech end guys? You guys, it's, yeah. There's a bunch of knobs over there. You twist one. Yeah. It's going to cause the volume to either go up or down.
Somebody keeps turning me up. Well, while we're waiting, did you hear there's another
there's an election on Tuesday.
Go ahead, buddy.
All right. And then we're going to vote in Kansas City, Missouri for new members of the school board. You know, what we should do is I think we should just give up on the school district in Kansas City. The Kansas City public school system?
Yeah. Oh, I saw.
Clearly, charter schools are the solution. You know, the school board voted down the sale of Westport High School to a developer who wanted to turn it into market-rate condos, a little bit of business space, and a place for Academy Lafayette, the French charter school, which has really changed the face. I mean, it literally, Academy Lafayette, a non-for-profit charter school, has taken old Kansas City, Missouri school buildings and turned them into vibrant places for the community to, you know, bring their children to get educated. And they literally done something with Kansas City, Missouri public schools that hasn't been done since like the 60s, save a few schools like Lincoln Prep, which have made them anchors in their community again. And the Kansas City, Missouri school district had accepted a letter of intent from Academy Lafayette for the purposes of buying Westport High School. And then the Kansas City, Missouri School District backed away from that last time they met.
I saw a sign on a guy's lawn this week that said, Kansas City School Board keeping Midtown property values down since 1985 or something like that.
Was it a handmade sign?
I think so, yeah.
Sounds like it. There's no logic to it whatsoever. And if you are a Jackson County resident and you pay property taxes, you look at the breakdown for what your property tax goes to, over 55% of that goes to the Kansas City, Missouri School District. Now, some of that money gets cut out of their budget and put into places like Academy Lafayette and the other charter schools like Crossroads and University Academy. But still, completely insane, something that is completely broken and failed. And you can't, I mean, there's good people that are running for the school board. You know, people that I know that attend the meetings say that all the candidates are basically good people. But you have to wonder, what will there be a solution? Of course not. None whatsoever. To the point where it should just be, I mean, literally, they need to kill it. I mean, does anyone think, I mean, what the Kansas City, Missouri School Board thought that Westport High School might someday become another Kansas City, Missouri public school again because they're putting in a light rail on Main Street? Light rail is going to bring in, you know, the urban density. It's foolish. There's so many young families living in Midtown now, and none of them are going to use the Kansas City, Missouri School District because they know that it doesn't exist. They're not living in Midtown because of the schools. That is not even on their radar. They're either going to homeschool, send a charter school, or send a private school, but it's not going to have anything to do with the Kansas City, Missouri School District. I mean, hell, it's Southwest. What, last week? I mean, two kids got arrested for raping an autistic girl, and this had gone on for how long? You know, she told, I don't know how, you know, how the story got out. Oh, yeah. She complained to her mother about having some issues in her region. Yeah, I mean, this is a 14-year-old girl with autism,
and it had been happening
over and over and over and over again. They had to suspend some school officials. I mean, Southwest is the early college campus in the Kansas City, Missouri school district. Such a joke. I mean, half the students from Southwest were from Westport High School when they shut Westport High School down. It's a despicable situation, and it's broken beyond repair. I mean, the guy before Steve Green, the superintendent, they brought him in, big contract, big, I mean, you know, said, we're going to, you know, I don't even remember the guy's name. He was here for...
That's the one who got his stock up and then took a job.
Yeah, took a job somewhere else and then just moved right along.
In the middle of contract negotiations.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Did you see that one, it was a school board in L.A. County, maybe? Somewhere in California. The superintendent was making like $600,000 a year. The school board loaned him the money for his house. Just, I mean, it was.
Yeah, I heard something about
that. Insane amount of money this guy and the school board voted themselves out of the property tax. But in a similar vein, I think the Kansas City School District has gotten so many chances and so many different.
Money's not the problem.
Right.
So how do you manage that? Because, I mean, I think the state's got some ideas about that, right? They don't like the Kansas City Missouri
School
District.
Well, they took away the accreditation,
right?
And the State Department of Education,
they threatened a takeover of the district as a,
right. And I think
as
that
a whole.
I don't think they want to do that, though.
No, well, and they've...
There's also a state law that requires if you live in a district that is unaccredited, that you have the opportunity to be bused to a district that is
right.
Accredited, which
paid
to
for
which
by the district
to which Lee Summit,
leaving.
You know, Independence, and Hickman Mills, all these other school districts said, "Oh hell no, please don't do that to us, please don't do that to." And it's being, you know, there's the I'm not thinking of the Missouri law that says you can't have unfunded mandates. There is a requirement there in regards to the state constitution that you can't pass a law that you don't have funding for. So they're that's on hold while that's being challenged legally.
Yeah, this Kansas City School District has somehow managed to get themselves out of the bucket that all of the rest of the state schools are in, and I'm not sure how they did that, but even when I was working for a school district once upon a time, all of the rules we had to follow. I mean, you could read bylaws, and it would exempt the Kansas City, Missouri School District, whether it's retirement, the peers funding, insurance, benefits, a lot of these things. Somehow, they've gotten away with even state law, and they're this island onto themselves, and I don't think it was ever for beneficial reasons, because they're not benefiting on any level since, and they haven't, and, you know, it's odd that can we vote to just shut them down or incorporate them into something else, or how many chances and dollars do these people get?
That would be, I mean, the argument would be, what about the children, right?
Well, but what about more the like how do you do that? I mean, because that's what we need is somebody with that kind of with a plan to disband the school district.
Right. You need to go talk to the board of directors for Academy Lafayette and figure out how to do that again 5-6 more times.
Right, but that requires the board of the Kansas City, Missouri School District to go to them and learn how to do that, not get rid of that board and let's do something different.
You know,
because I think that may be where we need to go this point.
And
like
you would need the local political leadership in Kansas City to make those moves. Now, why won't that happen?
Well, people don't go around doing that stuff.
Teachers' unions is why that won't happen.
Well, they're being dismantled. My my girlfriend's mom has been teaching in KCMO schools for 30 years, and they have all these teaching fellowship programs now where they're trying to get It's apparently really shady. They're trying to push out all the career teachers who are unionized because there's you know, everybody's getting ready to retire now, so they're kind of pushing them out, and they're bringing in these teaching fellows, these kids that are right out of college that are willing to work for cheap.
And most likely not stay a full 25 years.
Yeah, and since they can't get these old-timers to quit, they're making their a couple of the schools that she knows of, hers included, they've brought in new principals or whatever who's making their lives hell, and teachers are quitting left and right. So, you know, she's trying to hold on. She's got like 4.5 years left or whatever. And
but it's scary enough. Why is the Kansas City, Missouri school district, why is it still there? Why does it still exist? I mean, it's a completely failed, broken system. There's nothing positive that comes out of it, save for maybe Lincoln Prep. I mean, Lincoln Prep is positive. And there may be a couple other small, shining spots.
You could say the same thing about, you know, Congress. It was funny. I was listening to you guys talk about the school district, and for a second I was like, wait, are you guys talking about the Republicans and Democrats in Congress? And it's the same thing everywhere. Isn't it just a symptom of...
What we're really talking about is that a school cannot be any better than the parents who send their kids there.
Right, much like Congress isn't going to be any better than the people who keep sending these.
We're really just talking about an issue of society, and we live in a society that me and my family really saw this on St. Patrick's Day. There's a lot of trash out there. A lot of people. I mean, you know, and I
pick up trash, people.
That's not what I mean. I mean, the people.
No, I know.
We live in a society that evolution is very, very trashy.
I was going to say evolution. I didn't hear you guys talking about it earlier, but it's
us. You've been talking about revolution, and then he's talking about evolution. No revolution until you have evolution.
Well, as a species, we've kind of taken over our evolution or altered it. I mean, there is no survival of the fittest.
Yeah, we all just subscribe to Netflix now. Pass the time, right?
Right. I guess that's...
Well, yeah, nature, you know, the weak are cold, and only the strong survive. But it seems like with the, you know, school boards and school funding and programs, it's like you promote the weakest, even, you know, at the detriment of the entire herd.
Are you guys making an argument for social Darwinism right now?
Well, that's what I was getting ready to say, is it seems like...
Because I don't think
that,
you should.
That justifies the guy that suddenly says, you know, I'm going to take the realm or take the reins. And, you know, I mean, that gets back into your whole conspiracy thing. Because are there really people driving the society that this is the condition that they want us in? Or is this just how we get when we don't... when we don't allow for the survival of the fittest?
Or there's this whole thing that you got all these people who think that they're living inside this Christian value system of social justice and social programs and all these social well-being of everybody. But everybody forgets the bottom line, the real simple thing, the biggest conspiracy theory, is that America is a for-profit country. You know, so I feel like every single thing that's done, and I mean, I'm not commenting directly on the school board, but you got to figure, you know what I'm saying, like, how do you get in there? You got to figure, like, the people who are running things, right? Like, apparently this has been like a money thing. Like, my girlfriend's mom was telling me how this new guy comes in to a school somewhere here in Kansas City. And some of the higher-ups have been giving themselves raises, but then they've been pushing for cuts for the teachers. Well, since these teachers have unions, you know, they've been fighting them. But now they're trying to make their lives a living hell to get them out of there. And then you have these teaching fellowship kids out of college that'll just come and work. Basically, it's like a month-to-month lease with them. You know, they don't sign any contracts. It's like every year it's like, you want to teach again?
Everyone knows that teachers have been treated poorly.
Right.
I mean, the big trade-off was always teachers have benefits and they have pensions. And now those are going away.
And summer's off.
Right, and summer's off, right. There you go. There's benefits to these things, but they're evaporating as well.
Right.
As all these things change. It's an issue not so much of let the administration of the Kansas City, Missouri public school system figure it out. It's really to the point where people kind of have to figure it out. I mean, there's this amazing infrastructure that was built up over the course of this city's history of all these schools. There's all this physical infrastructure. How do you make something positive happen inside of that?
Well, I believe that the children are the future.
I mean, you can just keep going back.
And teach them well.
To the what might be some of the source, right? Because I'm thinking, like, you know, the whole DSAG case of the late 80s and early 90s, you're talking billions of dollars coming into the district, and that kind of attracting some folks who were maybe
there to make
less
cash, right?
Concerned about the kids, and so it just creates that huge infrastructure.
It's amazing how the administrators get paid, folks that aren't even employed in a school,
right,
but are employed downtown, the way they get paid compared to some of the teachers that are out on the front lines of the soldiers, you know, waging that campaign of education.
But that goes back to the whole centralization.
But I mean, is this
the costs of just being centralized?
So just last week, the Supreme Court weighed in on probably the most important campaign finance
great
issue ever
in America, right?
Ever. I'm probably the biggest one, bigger than Citizens United. I mean, literally saying that if. And it's hard to, it's, so the problem is, so Citizens United versus the FEC, Federal Election Commission, was a court case that essentially set up the situation to where we have these super PACs now. Super PAC is a political action committee that is not directly affiliated with the campaign or a candidate, but can put just opinions out there. And those opinions tend to be pretty clear as to what position they're ultimately taking. But the money flows in unlimited. It can flow in from foreign sources, from corporations, from the Koch brothers themselves. It will flow in directly from them. Now, with McCutcheon versus the FEC being decided in the affirmative for McCutcheon, who is an electrical engineer from Alabama who made a lot of money with his own company that did electrical engineering work, there used to be a cap where you could donate $123,000 and change total per election cycle.
I think it was 132, but that's something equivalent, right?
So there was a certain amount of money. So you could then donate $2,300 per candidate up until $48,000, and then you could donate the balance of that $48,000 minus the $123,000 and change or whatever it is, you could donate that money then to political action committees, but only in those $2,600 increments. Now it's infinity. Now Sean McCutcheon of Alabama or Sheldon Adelstein of Las Vegas can now give as much, they could give the minimum or the maximum, the $2,300 maximum, to every single candidate running for office in America. They could donate so much money directly to candidates and directly to these PACs. Unlimited, infinite dollars.
Right. But to be fair, that's only during each election cycle.
Yeah, no, right, exactly.
They got to leave them alone on the off years. The Onion's headline for that was landmark Supreme Court decision lets Americans cram cash directly into politicians' mouths.
It's
which is funny because that's not even a satire at that point.
So, right. But then the real problem is what's so wrong with this?
See, it's
right.
It's
this,
crazy
this guy Sean McCutcheon's got $1 billion.
What's wrong with it is that the bad guys are the ones with all the money. You know, we wouldn't be so bent out of shape about it if all the good guys had money. But you know, as it turns out, you know, I mean, elections. I mean, let's face it, elections have been shams in this country for quite a while now. I mean, this is just going to add to it. We're just going down the path to, you know, someday Paramount is going to run against, you know, Coca-Cola. I mean, that's what we're looking at here down the road, right?
Brando.
But when it comes to just a sense of just good old-fashioned freedom with my dollars, Why can't right. why what's wrong with the candidate just being able to spend his money, the a guy being able to spend his money the way he wants to, you know, throw an election? I mean, what's
as a matter of
pretty American, isn't it?
As a matter of principle, yes, but I like to think that I'm not at the bottom of the rung. I know I'm not at the top.
Oh, you're at the bottom.
Exactly. But like you said, I want to elude my, or you know, delude myself hey. That I'm not. But for me to make that cap, I would have to like take out a loan for multiple years without getting into what I make. I would have to like give my salary for multiple years just to match what he can lay down in a cycle. You see what I'm saying?
Well, no, that, so that makes an issue with one man, one vote.
Of the game. It's right. like if we're running a crap game here. Or
goes back to what I said. We're a for-profit country, so.
Right, but we're the board of directors, and I know it's naive to think that it, but in reality, we can, if we
here goes Mike again.
Decide that these here people have got to stop screwing us over like this.
What are we going to do?
I mean, for these knuckleheads to come out and say, well, it's a great day for freedom. I mean, watching Boehner say, like, this is awesome, this is great.
Or Clarence Thomas, who was like, well, why even have a limit?
Why are we?
That's not freedom. Yeah.
He just
like
threw
I
that
said,
out
you
there.
Can only do it per cycle. He's like, man, do what you want, when you want, however you want. Like you said, it's your money. But it's.
But so then, so if this is the truth, if money equals free speech, and the argument the Congress or the Supreme Court has always had in regards to free speech is that if you don't like the speech you're hearing, you need to put out some more speech, right?
Right.
That's always the argument. Don't say that we have to ban speech. The way to combat bad speech is with good speech.
Well, and I don't
that's
know.
Really, I mean, so that's kind of hard to do now if we're going to equate money and free speech. And literally, the Federal Reserve denominates our free speech. Our free speech is decided in a real way, because this isn't theoretical. Because when a president or a candidate for office runs, I mean, 70 to 80% of their budget is money spent on advertising, which is a direct correlation of money and speech.
Right, payoff to the cable company.
Tell me if I'm misunderstanding this, but I did hear the one thing about this court decision was that, you know, before with people giving money to the PACs, it was undisclosed. Like, they didn't have to disclose who gave what or how much, but the with the new vote
that's
that just came
super
through.
PACs.
Yeah, the super PACs did. Yeah, but with the way they're doing it now, it'll be more transparent. If so-and-so jerk off, from Wichita decides to give, you know, the maximum amount to this candidate, it'd be like, you know,
that might
be public
true.
Registered.
I mean, that might be true if you watch, you know, Hannity Nation.
Well, who doesn't? You know what world you're living in, dude?
I mean, you know, I mean, that's, I think, the point here. I mean, is it going to make things more transparent? I mean, you can go and read the filings that people put forth. The
and
FCC
still not know what the hell.
The FEC publishes the filings of campaign contributions and where they go. I mean, it's very interesting, you know, in regards, you know, the pitch had something about, because on the local ballot for Kansas City on Tuesday, there's also water bond, you know, financing a measure. It's, you know, yes on question one. You know, we're going to raise $500 million to fix the 120-plus-year-old infrastructure of the Kansas City Water Department, and we're also going to continue to raise your bills every month, too. So, you know, we're going to give it to you both ways. But if you look at
new septic tanks?
Jesse's still very concerned or confused about septic in Kansas City. I mean,
I grew up in the country.
He's concerned that his septic may be clogged up. And I'm not really sure how to address that anymore.
Yeah, and I don't know what a sewer is. That's where Ninja Turtles live.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is where Ninja Turtles live.
The plaza.
So if you look at the contributions of people who are putting money on yes on question one, it's local engineering firms, local construction companies.
Right.
They want it because they get the contracts.
For-profit country that we live in.
Well, I mean, right, but as opposed to what, a non-for-profit country? I mean, it's pretty clear that the way the country works is it's a for-profit, it's a pay-to-play system.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that guy in Rhode Island who raped his 3-year-old daughter got probation?
Oh, because he had enough money to pay for it.
Yeah, because right. he had a defense team.
Yeah, what the hell?
I mean, the judge said that felt like that prison might be difficult for him. Did you hear
right.
that?
Yeah, because I remember damn near.
Oh, and it was a girl. It was a female was so judge. She said, "You'll never last in you'll never last in prison."
That's kind of the point.
Well, no, and generally when you rape a 3-year-old girl,
whatever happens is
they always say that. That in prison they have a way of taking care of that situation.
Right. Yeah.
They actually enjoy that kind of.
That's what they say. I've never been
service.
Yeah. Although I have talked to a number of people who've been in prison, and I haven't ever brought that up, but they didn't seem like they were like.
But nevertheless, it's a pay-to-play system in this country.
It's called soap on a rope.
It's always been a pay-to-play. We're moving on. It's always been a pay-to-play system in this country.
You know, and I don't want to completely change the subject, but, you know, we're getting down to the last 15 minutes here. Is anybody going to talk about, you know, the KKFI field trip to Dallas to see the great works of art by our former president of the United States? Anybody see anything about that?
Show myself. No, I'm just
you haven't heard about... You know, George Bush has started painting, and he was talking about how when he met Putin, Putin insulted his dog. He, like, you know, had Barney with him.
I thought he said he saw his soul and thought he was a great guy.
No,
he said your dog is a little weak.
Putin goes, that is not a dog. That is, it is weak. And Putin goes and gets his dog, which is like this, a big dog.
Right.
And he's like,
boxer.
This dog, bigger, stronger. Faster and more efficient than Barney. And apparently there was something else with Merkel. I think that's her name, right? Is that her name?
Yeah.
The German chancellor.
Angela Merkel.
Hitler's daughter.
She apparently is afraid of... She has a phobia of dogs, it turns out. And
George Bush. You've seen the video of him touching her, right?
Yeah. And this isn't public knowledge, apparently, either. But apparently, Putin, you know, he had his KGB guys look into it, and so when they had a meeting, she came to Russia. Apparently, he had his dogs running around the room the whole time, like
just to throw her off. I can see it.
Sound like a long setup to a bad joke, but so what's that got to do with George Bush's paintings in Texas?
Oh yeah,
he painted a portrait of Putin's dog, and he did a portrait of Putin.
So what was KKFI going to? Is there like a
Yeah, we're going to raise money to go down there and, you know, rent a party bus and go down.
Proposing.
And, yeah, I'm proposing this.
Oh. When's the next active meeting? I don't
know. We're not supposed to.
Can we get that set up?
Hey, guys, we're not supposed to discuss KKFI governance on the air.
Right.
Okay, so if we're proposing to take a field trip, I mean, that made the cover of the New York Times. George Bush's paintings.
I don't understand that.
It's because the New York Times is a serious journalistic enterprise.
I thought it was the record of...
It's paper,
paper
of record.
Paper of record.
All the news that's fit
for profit.
To print. Sounded like a commie over there, Jesse. Everything's for profit all of a sudden.
I just think that if you just, you know, if you just keep that in mind, and anytime... It's like those weird sex games people play. Like after anything somebody says to you, you say in bed, right? Well, just if you keep that
that's
in mind, like anything that somebody says to you, just keep in mind for profit, and the whole world, you know, or at least our world, it makes perfect sense. It's not as complicated as people
absolutely.
Think it is.
That's the way the United States and probably the West operates is the capitalistic society. I mean, so.
Well, yeah.
But ultimately, I mean, if you look in places where there's not so much, there's still...
But in regards...
No money, no honey, you're saying no freedom?
Thugs running things. You gotta... People gotta...
There's thugs running things here. I got news for you.
That's what I'm saying. It's everywhere you go. So it's really a matter of the people who gotta do the Martin Luther King thing.
And
stand up and get the boots off your neck.
Like the thugs...
Get shot in public.
The point being, though, it's a mentality that runs America. It's not like you need to have people on the same page as far as how to control and manipulate the political system.
For profit.
They do have their committees, and they do have their little round tables, and they do discuss that. But really, You just need to involve money in it, and people know what to do. They know how to, you know, it's just like how those ladies of the night on Truce, they know what to do for crack rocks. You know, the corporate mentality knows what to do to make money. The story of, you know, this is very interesting, it's several years old, but these power traders on Wall Street who have these high-speed fiber optic connections.
Yeah, the flash, they're just like a hundredth of a second faster. Dude, they're not even that much faster.
Right.
But that is legal.
Right.
To be able to look at what somebody's doing before they and make money just scamming the system forwards and backwards. And that's just and people are like, "Well, this is a good business model. I mean, let's do this." And people have made millions of dollars by investing in fiber optic cables that allow them to see what somebody else is trying to bid up and then manipulating the stocks that way. I mean, that's the mentality of things. Cash rules everything around me.
Hello, we're Christians. That's how we do.
I think Jesse's had a sufficient amount of coffee.
For profit.
You said this coffee was weak. For profit, you're absolutely right.
So you're saying don't refill my coffee.
But looking forward and thinking about that and looking at the McCutcheon versus the FEC, and just like, let's just be honest about things. I mean, the American democracy is a pay-to-play system. And that's, I mean, if that's, let's just say it like that. Let's just be honest about it and not pussyfoot, you know, us into some sort of idealism about what this country stands for.
I think if you...
Right?
If you listen to Republicans, in a sense, that's what they are saying. They're saying, don't be a wuss about it. Go find your own.
Democrats feel the same way, too. They just don't like to talk about it on the, you know, House floor.
I never like to ever...
The political system is a pay-to-play system.
Right.
I mean, you know, we know... I mean... Lest us forget Mr. Clinton, Mr. President Clinton, renting out the Lincoln bedroom, et cetera. I mean, it's a, you gain access.
No, absolutely.
That way.
Well, you know, somebody.
But as a matter of argument, they're like saying, it's a great day for freedom. This is how it should be.
And there's some truth to that. Again, like going like, hey, I should be free to spend my money the way I want to spend my money. How are you going to make it? How would a good libertarian make an argument against that?
I think at a point, and I mean, you know, it comes back to like the naive notion that we are the board of directors, we, the people, right? That we should reserve the right or to pick up the responsibility to wake up to this and to kind of be heard about a lot of this stuff. But it's hard to get people rallied because there's so much that needs to change, right? Because they've reinforced this pay-to-play system through gerrymandering, through, you know, the rules that they put down just to have a debate run for president. You know what I mean? The way it's just locked down so tightly that it requires us to like maybe go back to not trying to argue how to change the political funding for this or that, but to just go straight back to the election and go like, all right, election shall be publicly financed. Is that too commie?
I think that was the direction in which this country had been heading.
So how do you feel, Ben, about the whole thing? You know, how could you tell someone, you know, where to spend their money? I mean, how do you feel about the court's decision?
I'm trying to say that I feel honest about it.
You feel like it's a good?
I mean, I don't agree with Clarence Thomas, and I don't think it's necessarily a good decision. But again, let's just be clear about what America is. Let's put down our idealism.
Right.
Let's put down these lofty notions of liberty and freedom and democracy and just go, like, if you have money, that's what makes it work. That's how you get justice. That's how you get representation. That's how you get your voice heard.
Well, the one interesting thing, and you know, we
and that's the key here.
We don't get the opportunity very often to, you know, defend Democrats, and I don't really like to do that very often. But the one thing, if you looked at the way they all voted, did you notice that? Every single justice that was appointed by a Republican.
Well, so I was talking to my wife about this and trying to explain to her what McCutcheon versus FEC was. So I'm not trying to explain. She's very aware of it. And she goes, who voted for that? And I go, well, the same people that voted for George W. Bush on his first term.
Right.
The exact same people. And there are people out there that make an argument that the Supreme Court is the problem in America.
Yeah.
The ironic component of that being is that conservatives always like to talk about legislating from the bench. And you can say, well, that's precisely what the conservative majority on the Supreme Court does, is they legislate from the bench. You can make that argument. But, you know, this idea that the Supreme Court is clearly not insulated from politics. Clearly, the Supreme Court is manipulated. They're not an impartial arbiter of the nation's, you know, constitution anymore. Maybe they were at one point.
When life was slower, do you think that the lifetime term is the problem?
I'm not saying that I think it is. I'm
asking. I think
hear arguments being made about that, yeah.
I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Because you can, I mean, a guy like Roberts is going to be there, and Alito, right? Kagan.
Right.
Those folks are going to be there for, like, it's reasonable to see them there for another 30 to 50 years.
I read somewhere that
we don't have that.
No, I don't think it's going to be 50 years, but 30 years maybe. I mean,
Roberts is
probably 50 in his
years
50s.
Old?
Yeah.
Scalia is actually 800 years old.
You don't see us being able to keep some money propped up.
And I think that's precisely I mean, why George Bush put Roberts in there.
Right.
You know, because he was young and, you know, the opportunity to have a new Chief Justice, and I mean that's clearly what that was done for. There's a lot of tweaking that needs to be done.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
I agree.
But
we almost need a new constitutional convention, but it's not.
No, we don't even need one of those. We just need to slice off all the fat that's on the current one. I mean, it's really the problem.
You think it's just a matter of getting back to the Constitution?
I'm a traditionalist. It's like the lady that holds up the IRS code and says, and has the IRS code in one hand and the Constitution in the other, that this document free to people, this document enslaved to people. You know, one is, you know, 10 pages long, the other one is 10,000 pages long. It's as simple as that. There's just too much fat there. Too much fat. But I don't think that the solution the government can't be a part of the solution at this point. They're so incredibly the problem.
Right.
And the entrenchment of money in it is not going, the pay-to-play component of it ain't going to change nothing. And my favorite thing is that whenever you're talking to somebody who's of a conservative mindset about these election reforms, they're like, well, the unions.
Right.
Well, the unions.
It's like the unions, like, well, money ain't.
No, that's real money. That's the union money is real money. Trial lawyers are real money for the Democrats. That's real money for the Democrats.
No, right.
But still, it's like the unions are going bye-bye.
Dwindling. Yeah.
See ya. The unions ain't going to be, I mean, it's a very knee-jerk reaction, but unions are clearly going toodaloo. And we're going to have to go and take our little suicide break for all you people out there. It's about a minute before the 3 o'clock hour, and I got some things to play for you. We'll have Suicide TDK, Life on Record. There's nothing on here.
It's number 308. It's called Changes.
Right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, after these brief messages.
The 2014 KKFI Band Auction, April 10th through April 28th, is our biggest ever with over 120 bands and solo acts, including David Bassey, Wild Women of Kansas City, Danny Cox, Fast Johnny Ricker, Last Free Exit, and many more. Complete schedule at kkfi.org. Want to make sure you don't miss out on your favorite band? Email us a pre-auction bid at earlybird@kkfi.org or call 888-931-0901.
Attention local musicians, if you play rock, jazz, folk, bluegrass, hip-hop, Americana, reggae, world music, or blues, like D.C. Bellamy here in the background, consider signing up your solo act or your band to the KKFI Band Auction this April. We will showcase your music for 30 minutes on our 100,000-watt radio station in exchange for a donation of a two-hour gig to the KKFI Band Auction. Intrigued? Call Bill at 816-994-7869. That's 816-994.